This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. And by Harry's. Stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free, just cover the shipping by going to harrys.com/whatthetech. Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin, and I am having the worst day ever, and I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
You know, I'm a little embarrassed that I'm not having a worse day.
Oh, man, I'm having a
usually I'm right there with you, you know?
No, terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible day today. I got a funeral to go to. One of my best friend's mothers passed away, so yep. I have to go to a funeral right after this. I have 5,000 things going on at work. My Skype machine no longer works. The fans are not working properly. Mm-hmm. One of the other Skype machines, for some reason, I don't know if I most likely one of the cats got into, ripped out all the fan cables connected.
Sorry.
So that's happened.
Yep.
My camera, the house, the people, like the cleaning people came after we were doing construction to come and like clean up a little bit. They broke one of my cameras, the one that you have. The one that you use, they broke one mm-hmm. of those. That's like $1,400. And yep. my daughter came and knocked over my camera today, the only camera that I had left, and now it's glitching. So, this is my day. How is your day, Paul?
Actually, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
lately, it's been kind of terrible, usually. But,
I'm so glad you're having a great day.
yeah. Sorry. I mean, yeah. My house is a mess, but okay. Other than that...
It's okay. Guys, we do have a lot to talk about. Other than the misery that I'm living right now, we do have a lot to talk about. And this is actually really weird. I can't see Paul. Normally, for people who watch the show and have seen... like,
so you can't
scenes,
see me what I'm doing to you now.
I have no idea. No, because this is where the production machine is. It's right here. So I can't view this screen. Actually, the smart thing would be to have it like right here, right? So I have a monitor here that connects to one of the Skype machines that I use for return video. When I don't have a person on Skype, I actually use that for the mirrored view. So I could see you and I could see me. It's a whole thing here. That machine no longer wants to work. So I am looking at nothing. So this is going to be very interesting how we do this show. Paul, I just need you to hold me.
I was going to say, you obviously need a hug.
I do. I think this is what it really comes down to, is that I need a hug. We do have a lot to talk about, obviously, but before we do, I want to take a moment to talk about our sponsor, and that's Harry's. Guys, I have been talking about this for so long. If you are looking to buy a gift for anybody, or even for yourself, you know, if I pride myself in my beard, actually. That's the only thing I pride myself at this point, is this beautiful beard that I have. And people always tell me, how do you do a Harry's read without shaving? I actually do shave every day, and I got to clean it up. And I was a big fan of these cheapo disposable razors. I'm not going to say the brand, but for years, I've been using it since I was like 15. And over the last couple of years, it's gotten cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Not in price, the price has gone up, but in quality. The overall quality of these things is terrible. To the point that one shave and you're done. When Harry's started advertising, they started sending me these sample kits. Actually, where is my hair? I actually have one back there, and I'm not even going to go look for it because it's going to be a whole thing. But they sent me this beautiful shaving set, and in the set comes the shaving gel, the Harry's 5-blade precision engineered razor, and the razor handle. And I started using this thing, and honestly, it is the best shave I've ever had. And you could also have the best shave you've ever had. Sign up. You could start for just $15. You could sign up for the shaving set. You go to harrys.com/whatthetech. You can sign up for their shaving set over there. They also have a whole bunch of stuff if you want to go there and take a look. harrys.com/whatthetech. Go there, sign up. You want to buy someone a Father's Day gift. You want to buy someone a Christmas gift. You want to buy someone a birthday gift. This is the best thing to do. Honestly, I bought a Harry's shaving set for almost every guy in my life, and they absolutely love it. Everybody's a big fan. Harrys.com/whatthetech. I want to thank them for supporting the show. Hi, Paul.
How you doing?
So a couple things I want to talk about. Last week, we kind of touched on Andromeda.
Yep.
And I got so much feedback over this, and you had mentioned this folio-type device that you I actually just saw it on Throat.com. I don't know when did you post that article?
I didn't. It was Brad who did it. But I think it was Brad talked about it first on our podcast, and then I think some other site wrote about it, and then he finally just decided to write about it because he had some of this information and wanted to get it out there pretty quickly. But I think it was last week, probably.
But had you seen this image?
Yeah, the patent thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So yep. I'm going to pull it up here for people watching this. For people listening, I apologize. You can watch the. You can go to Throat.com and check it out there. But this is kind of the I guess for the patent, the schematics, the what they're trying to get.
I mean, that's been around for a while.
So I hadn't seen it with the hinge.
Yeah.
Because that hinge is very much the same
surface-like hinge.
Yeah, it's a surface. It's a hinge on the surface book. Where would this fall in their lineup? Would this be a surface device if it's even a I know it's a concept at this point, but
definitely.
Okay,
definitely.
So this would be a surface device. This would be running ARM.
Well, I would speculate. Yes. I mean, it makes sense. This would be ARM.
I don't know why. I got this weird thing here. I don't know why. It would. I mean, I would assume that it would because.
Yep. Yep.
But what? To kind of
what's
go back,
the point?
What's the point?
What is the point?
Yeah. What's the point?
You know, Microsoft has been hinting at something like this for a long time, right? They've been talking about how they don't intend to abandon mobility. That they understand that making a smartphone doesn't make a lot of sense, but that, you know, by the way, remember we make new categories with Surface, and we're thinking about doing that in mobile. And you look at that, and you're like, oh, look, there's a new form factor. You know, maybe. For Microsoft fans, of course, this thing evokes the Courier design, which was a two-screen foldable book-like device that never happened. And I think there's, you know, maybe some call for them to make something like this. You know, and maybe it makes a lot more sense today than it might have a few years back. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, you look at that thing and you think reading and you think note-taking.
Yeah.
You could see it being pushed on education. Given the way things are going with Surface, I could see it being pushed at businesses as well. And maybe for, you know, those frontline type workers or people out in the field or whatever. I don't know. You know, I don't see it as a, I don't know, mainstream popular device type. Like, it's not a laptop. It's not a tablet. You know, I don't think it's going to take it, you know, over for either one of those things. But I could see it as a kind of a vertical solution, you know, so, education plus business.
This can't be a higher price device. If that's kind of where they're headed, right? If they're going for education and they're going for business, I mean, maybe for enterprise, but.
This is the company that sells a $1,500 laptop for education. I mean,
you're right.
It's kind of hard to say. You got to remember the goal of the category invention thing isn't to own a market. It's to define a market. And hopefully what happens is the HPs, the Dells, the Lenovos of the world will come out with cheaper versions of this, right? So, and do their own takes on it.
What market is this? If you have a tablet and you have a convertible laptop that folds and you could write on it and it takes, you know.
No, I know. I got to be honest. I have a little bit of a problem with this. In fact, I just wrote something about smartphones and I was talking about those new tall form factors that we see from Samsung and everyone else now, right? Even Apple's doing it. 18x9, roughly. 6-inch screen, roughly, you know, super good camera, et cetera. And I was sort of reminded of how in the smartphone space, the phablet form factor, which was basically innovated by Samsung, destroyed a couple of things. It destroyed the mini tablet market, you know, and it almost destroyed the tablet market too. I mean, you know, people kind of decided like a big phone would kind of do it, you know?
Yeah.
So like what does this solve, you know? Yeah, I don't think it can replace a laptop for most people, and I don't think it can replace a phone for most people. So I'm not really sure. I mean, I feel like there's more to it than just the design that we haven't seen the full picture yet. Microsoft must have some justification for it that they're not
telling us, you know, and we can't figure out. It's not a good sign, right?
Yeah, you know. I never wrote this yet, and I still might, but I had started an article called Some Uncomfortable Questions About a Foldable Surface Device, right? The idea being that, you know, it's very easy in the kind of fanboy space to get really excited by anything, whether it's a concept design that some other enthusiast created or an actual, you know, thing like this, which came from, you know, came from a patent or something. Without thinking clearly kind of through the scenarios, like, I think the questions you're asking are very good, because there should be nothing but questions with a device like this. Microsoft doesn't really have a great track record of creating mobile devices that are super popular. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's, you know, is it the lack of commitment for them, or the lack of innovation, or the lack of concept? I mean, why have they failed in the, I mean, again, failed is a strong word, but in the mobile market, yeah, they have failed, right? They don't have a tablet on the market, really. There's no, other than the Surface, it's a premium, but like I'm saying, like a tablet.
Other than the Surface, which, by the way, they market as a laptop.
It's a laptop,
Even though it really is a tablet. No, I just saw this interview with the guy who's in charge of Amazon's consumer products, and he's a guy I've never heard of. I couldn't tell you his name. It doesn't really matter, but he repeated kind of an age-old kind of business competition saying, which is actually very apt, which is that if, you know, as a competitor, as a company in whatever business, you know, you have a choice to make. You can try to focus on your competitors, or you can focus on your customers, right? Yeah. The notion there being that, you know, if Apple does something, like like a lot of their competitors feel the need to do that thing, you know, and it's not always thought through in a meaningful way. And I think with Surface in particular, but maybe Microsoft in general, I think they have a hard time sometimes thinking about the customer first and the competition second. You know, that this device sort of tells me that there's still a part of Microsoft that's really burned by the fact that it got killed in mobile, and it still wants desperately to be part of that play, and that they're going to justify this by saying, well, look, it's a new form factor. See, so now we're back. And it's like, that form factor has to make sense first. And I just, again, like, there could be more to this. Obviously there probably is, but, I don't know. I don't want to go too far in this direction, because A, this device may never happen, and B, there could be something. This could be some reasonable thing going on here. They could very well downplay this if it ever does ship, and say, look, this is it's for vertical markets. It's kind of like HoloLens, a Surface Hub, or even that Surface Pro with LTE kind of thing. Like,
you know what? You're absolutely right. It is for vertical markets.
I think so.
Yeah, that's actually, because a lot of people have been saying, who is this for? You're right.
Yeah,
it's a very specific group.
And you know, the RCN guy came here the other day, put a cable box in, so he's doing stuff on his little phone that he has like a little stylus, and he's tip tap tapping away on the thing. And I'm thinking, like, this is a really inefficient way to do what he's doing. But of course, it's more efficient than carrying a laptop or some bigger, bulkier device. And maybe this kind of thing would make more sense for that kind of use. You know, it isn't meant to replace your smartphone. It's something you use for work, you know, during the day. And you know, maybe.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm curious about this device. We've been curious about it since the Courier. So this Andromeda, I guess, platform, you know, what do you envision this thing to be? In reality, I mean, to be honest, we've spoken about this for a couple of weeks now, and if Microsoft embraced Android and just put all their, you know, skinned it and to make it, you know, you could have your own launcher, you have Office as the default application for all this stuff. You have Office, you have Outlook, you have Word, the whole suite. And then Skype is your messaging service. You just created a mobile platform that many, many, many people, people that didn't even consider Windows Phone, would consider now.
I guess. But, I mean, you might make the argument that Windows Phone had Office. It had Microsoft's entertainment services. It integrated with popular media, social media services. It had Skype communication that integrated with messaging in the very beginning. You know, they had a really cool integration story there.
Why?
You know, it sounded good on paper. You know
you should be doing a series at this point about things that why they didn't work, because you think about is it hard to penetrate that market at this point, even for a Microsoft?
Yeah, it is. I care very deeply about that particular topic. And the problem I have with it is I've thought about doing that kind of thing. And I feel like I've walked around it a little bit, but everyone has their kind of pet theory about why it didn't work, right? If they had just done this, or if this had just happened, or if, you know, and it's so much more complex than that, because it was really 150 factors all combining together in a perfect storm that killed it. Like, and for that thing to have gone right, it would have to be like that Patriots Super Bowl victory. Like, everything had to happen exactly right, you know, and it, that never happens. And so it's kind of a tough one, but I'm still, you know, I'm still kind of like, it still kind of burns me a little bit, because I feel like they really did have some good ideas there. But I think at this point, you just have to accept where the market is and work within it. And by the way, a lot of Microsoft does do that, right? I mean, there's a lot of talk at Microsoft about putting their apps and services on other phones, and they do that. I mean, and it's, you could buy an Android phone today and have a very real Microsoft experience on there if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of, it's still kind of like an open wound, you know. It's like a, yeah, it's a festering kind of terrible thing.
It's I would love that series from you, you know, like, why did Vista fail? Why did this fail? Because there's a lot of misconceptions as to why certain things didn't work.
Okay.
But,
well, okay. That's actually kind of interesting, because I could, off the top of my head, come up with a couple of things that could fall into these categories. Like, people talk about, like, the Kin, for example. And routinely what you'll hear from people is like, oh, that thing failed because Microsoft made this terrible thing. It was like bad timing. It was the wrong phone, blah, 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 whatever. And they're wrong. That the reason that thing died was Verizon got greedy and priced the data plan like it was a smartphone.
Oh,
that thing,
Kin. Yeah.
Yeah, that thing was perfectly positioned at that time.
And it was a great
in
between.
To hit a very real market. You know, yeah. It was a great, there were a couple of devices, but yeah.
How soon after did Windows Phone come out? A year and a half?
Actually, I think it was the same year. I believe that the Kin came out the spring of 2010.
Yeah.
And that the first Windows phones fall. Came out October, November, same year.
Interesting.
You know, Microsoft made some mistakes, to be sure. I mean, they belatedly, they had, this was kind of something that came out of the
danger
group.
It came out 2 years too late. That was the problem with the Kin.
No, not really. There was at that time frame still a market for these feature phones that sat between like flip phones and smartphones. Like, a phone that had just the apps you needed, but not an app store, you know, there was definitely room for that. And it was a great phone for kids. No, they decided to, at the last second, describe it as some kind of a Windows phone. Like, it wasn't, you know, Windows Phone, capital W, capital P. It was a Microsoft phone, and everything we do is in Windows, so it's a Windows phone. And it was like, guys, no. Like, it was just a huge mistake.
Yeah.
But not what killed it.
The amazing story of Microsoft in the mobile market. This is something we're going to constantly talk about, obviously,
sure,
on the show,
sure,
because it's a exhausting topic more than anything.
It is exhausting.
It really is exhausting when you think about how they had this opportunity when they control the PC market, essentially. And
the perfect thing to leverage.
And they couldn't do it in a way to connect with mainstream. Listen, Apple, for all the fanaticism that exists with Apple, there's also a lot of disdain and dislike towards Apple products.
You're right. I'm sorry. There always has been. You're right.
There always has been. There's always been the people that say, oh, Apple sucks. And, you know, they've never used it, but that's their mentality. When you have that advantage, especially from the PC side, to say, okay, you know what? Apple has this market. Android has this market. But we could do something really special here and do something in between.
So, to be fair, though, I mean, so, okay, let's go down the rabbit hole. You know, a lot of
they
people...
tried.
Yeah, a lot of people have complained that what you're saying, you know, Microsoft should have leveraged the obvious advantage they have in computers to dominate the smartphone market or whatever. The truth is, for a little while, they did. It's kind of funny. It's like, if you want to go back to the 1980s and think about computers, you know, everyone knows about IBM and Mac, but what people don't really seem to understand is that the computers that won the PC business in the 80s were Commodore 64s. Like, you know, these are the things that sold in volume. These are the things that sold the most. And the phone market was kind of like that in the early days. Like, we forget what it was like because the Microsoft won the first phase of what I would consider the smartphone market, which is it beat Palm, you know. Microsoft actually did win that battle. The problem is they never went further with it. But I think the argument to be made here is that the reason Microsoft couldn't parlay its success with PCs into success in the mobile market is because everything they did in the mobile market was informed by their success in the PC markets. The mobile devices that Microsoft came out with, the Pocket PCs at first and then later the Windows-powered phones, whatever they were called, Windows Mobile eventually, were like little PCs because that's what the company. I mean, that's what they did. So the next phase of the smartphone market, where Microsoft actually lost, wasn't so much when the iPhone came out, although that was the final asteroid that destroyed all of it. It was when companies like RIM and then, you know, later BlackBerry and then Nokia in Europe basically came out with mobile devices that were mobile devices first. They weren't miniature PCs. And those were much more compelling designs for people. So if you think about like a smartphone, like you're a company that makes a PC operating system. Could you turn that into a successful smartphone? Maybe. But how about if you're a company that makes mobile phones, like cell phones, could you make a compelling smartphone design? And the answer is, yeah, actually you can. It's much easier to do that. And the thing about Apple is that when they came out with the iPhone in 2007, they destroyed everything. Like that was just a shot out of the blue. Like nobody saw this coming. And they certainly put a nail in Microsoft's coffin in mobile for sure. But they also destroyed companies that were much more fully invested in mobile. In fact, were only invested in mobile. Companies like RIM, Nokia, Palm, you know, Motorola. Kind of goes on and on and on. So those companies were all either gone or they exist today like Nokia does as a brand that's used by some other company. Or they're just vastly reduced. You know, nobody talks about BlackBerry as being competitive in any way, shape, or form because they're not. Those guys were dominant.
Big time. Like major. I mean, they had enterprise. Forget about dominating the consumer market. They were dominating enterprise and the consumer market. I mean, it was both. They really had control of both scenarios.
So anyway, I when I think about, you know, Microsoft lost in mobile, you know, I mean, honestly, in retrospect, the answer should have been, of course they did. What else were they going to do? They didn't really have that much to leverage, you know. The other thing is that like mobile phones, even early mobile phones, before we had app stores and touch screens and all that kind of stuff, and they got super personal, were more personal devices than PCs, right?
Yeah.
And once we stop doing fun stuff on PCs, and most people don't do fun stuff on PCs anymore. I know some people game, and you know, there's some minority population that does entertainment things on PCs, but mostly we use other devices for that. You get nothing to leverage there. All you've got is work. You know, Microsoft's message this past week, right at Future Decoded in London, was about the new world of work. It's a phrase that they've been using for a decade, probably. But what they were really saying, and they literally say this like pretty much in slightly different words, is you work from everywhere now. You work when you're on the bus going to work. You work on the bus when you're coming home from work. You work at work. You work at home. And they're like, we're going to make devices that help you work everywhere. And okay. But I think you could understand there might be a backlash to that little scenario or that little philosophy, right? And I just don't think that that has legs. I mean, you could make the greatest work device in the world, whatever it might be, a Surface or whatever, but it's still a work device.
Yeah, yeah.
It's work, right? Work's not a fun word. It's work.
But the work is not fun for me today, I'll tell you that.
Well, no, but you see the point, right? I mean, when people turn to their phone or they turn to an Xbox or they turn to their Roku on their living room or whatever, you know, whatever it is, they're not looking to work, you know. They're looking for to be distracted and to have fun and to relax. Yeah, and that's not what the PC is.
Very interesting, Paul. I'm trying to prioritize where I'm going next with this because I have a lot to talk about. But before we do, I want to thank our sponsor, and that's Casper. Guys, I told you last week how I sold a couple Casper mattresses during my corporate meeting at work.
Yes.
They make me do live reads now for Casper, and they thought it was hysterical when I was doing a mattress ad on a tech show. And I explained to them how this all ties in how the technology that they use in Casper mattresses is far more superior than everybody else that's on the market right now, and how unbelievable these guys are. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress for a couple of years now, and I have to tell you, every night I sleep like a baby. I had one of those $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 mattresses. I'm not going to name the name. And I probably have a couple times, and I'm not supposed to, but... And it was utter misery. It was way too soft for me. The quality wasn't great. And then I got the Casper mattress, and it came in this box, and I set it up, and immediately I knew that I can't ever imagine buying another mattress. They have a great offer for you guys. When you use the offer code Andrew, the promo code Andrew at checkout, if you go to Casper.com/Andrew, use the promo code Andrew at checkout, you get $50 off any mattress purchase. Terms and conditions do apply. You get $50 off any mattress purchase. They also have, if you're looking for other things, they have other things also. They have duvet covers. They got foundations. They got dog beds. They got two types of mattresses now. They got the standard Casper. Actually, three types of mattresses. Huh. They got three types of mattresses. Casper.com. Let me just go to Casper here. It's unbelievable how this company has grown. They got the Essential, the Casper, and the Wave. They're three mattresses right now. Unbelievable company. I truly support them, and they've been a great support for us here at What the Tech, and of course on the GFK network. They're making all this amazing stuff, and the growth of this company has been unbelievable, and it's due to people like our audience. They have purchased Casper mattresses. Go to Casper.com/Andrew. You get $50 off any mattress purchase. Obviously, terms and conditions do apply, and I want to thank them for supporting the show. So, Paul, I have a story for you.
Alrighty.
Are you ready for this?
So yeah.
I got this Mac that I very much hate at this point. And so I was on the beta for High Sierra.
Yep.
And when the beta, leading up to the release, I was on the beta. And I started having some wonky problems because it started doing other beta updates afterwards. And I needed to just blow this whole thing away. I was having some Wi-Fi issues that I still am. I was having some consistency issues with the PC, with the laptop. And I said, you know what, let me just format everything. I have a pretty good cloud-based system, and I can't, I don't want to store anything on here. So I literally put everything in the cloud, and then I'm done. So wiping things off, it's super easy for me. So I go to format, and I do the obvious upgrade method. And this is something great that Apple does, is even if you blow away this entire computer, right? I put in a new hard drive. You know what happens? A little prompt comes up, and I could actually do a recovery through the cloud.
Yes.
Right? Which I've loved. Yep. It's actually really great. Unfortunately, it's the operating system that the PC came with, the laptop came with. But
yeah,
since I had Sierra on this, it's not that big of a deal. I don't need to. I wasn't going to go and create a bootable drive and do all that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to bother with it. And this is something I've done over the last 10 years, very easily. So I formatted the hard drive. And I went to go do the backup update, and it keeps failing because Apple went to a different file management service system.
Oh, that's right.
So you cannot do an upgrade that way. It's actually, you need to kill the partition. You can't just do a format. You got to kill the partition and start fresh. Create a new partition for the hard drive. And I had like a little backup drive that I had created in the partition when I initially got this. And I had to wipe it out because the file management system is totally different. And I'm thinking, my God, a lot of people are going to be confused when, God forbid, they need to do this. It kind of broke that one feature that I really liked about it. So if you have any laptop prior to the point of High Sierra coming out, You have to blow away the partition.
Well, okay, so
to do a clean install.
Let me just I'm doing this off the top of my head, but yeah. If I were going to do this, I have an older Mac, so it's like a MacBook Air from 2,000 years ago or something. But you get into I can't even remember how you do it. I mean, mine came with a goofy little thumb drive thing. I think that was tiny, like this. You can stick and you can boot off that, but. Skipping over that. Were I going to install from the cloud or otherwise, I would always blow away the partition. So when you run the setup application, there's a tools menu probably, and you can go in, and one of the things is the disk.
Yeah, the disk utility. Yeah.
You can basically remove the drive partition from there.
Yes, that's what I did.
And that's what you did. So I think I would do that as a matter of course anyway. So you're saying you had to do that.
So normally what I do is I'll go into that disk utility and I'll format it. I'll erase the drive. Let's say it's whatever partition the operating system goes on. I erase that, but I do have a secondary drive for, photos and stuff like that that I always just leave. You can't. I had to kill the entire partition of the hard drive. I had to go back to one partition and start over.
But what I mean is, like, I think I would have always done that anyway.
You would have always done that. Okay.
Yeah, and but here's the thing. So I've been doing this for years and years, but I don't do it that often. Obviously, I can't remember exactly this, the exact steps. But every time I do end up blowing away the Mac, whatever Mac, I do this, and I'm wondering now if it wasn't related to some problem. It's not the problem you're having, right? Because they have a new file system. I get that. That's new to now, but that's part of the step. That's what I do, right? So I'm going to clean install the Mac. So however you get that setup thing, cloud or local, doesn't matter. Yeah. Tools, disk utility, wipe out all the partitions. I think you just create one new partition. There's that one confusing step where it asks you what you want to format it like.
Yeah, journaled, whatever,
Yeah, and I always have to look it up because I'm always like, do I want journaled? I don't remember.
Well, now it's something else. The new ones, there's
APFS,
no more.
APFS, yeah.
Yeah, APFS. Yeah. And that's what it was.
So the question is, if you go back to the original system you had on there, which is what, Sierra?
Sierra, yeah.
That's not an option. Is that what you're saying?
So it wasn't until I blew it away, and because of ATFS, because the hard. So this is the interesting thing. Okay, so when it installs High Sierra,
it's like troubleshooting Macs with Paul. It's not going to be a very.
I would love to. You know what? This is a great show.
I mean, I could go get my own Mac and look it up. Yeah. It's
like flying with the vision impaired. Yeah.
We took this lifelong Android user, and now we're going to have them do help support for the iPhone.
Oh God! When maybe someone could explain this, because I found it interesting, because when you go upgrade to High Sierra, it converts the entire file management system.
As part
to
of
APFS.
That install, you convert the disk. Regardless.
You could upgrade, so even, but you can't downgrade.
Yeah, so even if you chose, it doesn't matter what file system you choose on Sierra, it's going to go to APFS on the new one. Yeah,
on the new one. So,
now you're saying because you've done that, now you go to install Sierra again as a clean install.
Yeah.
You have to wipe it out. But wouldn't you be wiping it out? See, to me, I'm like, of course you're wiping it out.
You are wiping it out, but I wouldn't wipe out the secondary partition. So if it's Windows, the C drive and the D drive is on the same hard drive. It's a different partition. Why would I wipe the D drive if I need to format the C drive?
I would never partition like that, but I would kill it.
You would kill it. The other thing is, it would be interesting, and I'm curious as to why they don't do this. Why can't they just? They already could detect what kind of computer it is when you're pinging the server to download the operating system. Why wouldn't they just upgrade you to the latest operating system?
Yeah, I know.
There's no benefit for them not to do it.
I wanted the same thing, because the first thing you're going to do is run the store, download the update, go to the new version anyway. Yeah. I don't know. It may be a support licensing thing, like they have to do it for legal reasons or something. I wondered that.
Or give you an option, just say like, hey, do you want to go to the latest version of the operating system, or do you want to go with what came with it? It's at your own risk.
Who wouldn't choose that?
Who wouldn't choose?
I know. No, I want the old one.
They really harass you when you're in the machine, when you're up and running to kind of upgrade. Why wouldn't they just do it? I found that interesting.
That's an excellent question.
Yeah. Also, you got the Spectre 13, the new one, right?
Yes, I do.
You got it. It arrived. Mine has yet to arrive. I sent a letter. I penned a letter to Hewlett-Packard.
How dare you, sir?
With my quill. Dear Hewlett-Packard.
And then you like licked the end of it.
I observed that Mr. Thorat received his...
Sure.
One of these, like that.
Yep.
So you got it. What do you think of it? I'm very curious, because I had about an hour with this device and I fell in love with it.
Yeah. It's gorgeous. And the interesting side effect of it is, because it has that kind of ceramic finish, which is hard edge, right? So you can kind of tap your fingernail on it. It's got that kind of hard feeling to it. The EliteBook X360 that I think is the one you have.
One right here.
Has what many people have described as like one of the best typing experiences,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And it's hard to quantify.
Quantify, yeah.
I guess quantify?
Yeah.
Why that would be, right? What is it that makes this thing special?
Well, I could tell you. I could tell you for me.
It's a key feel, maybe? A depth of throw?
It's a combination of the depth of throw. Of
materials?
Yeah, I would say it's a combination of the depth of throw and the spacing. Yep. And the spacing. Placement of the keyboard. So, give an example. So, let me see if I can pull this up here. So actually, this works well. Here's a keyboard, right?
Yep.
I feel that the spacing and this like on the sides too. So now, you know, the new ones are obviously a little different, but for this one especially, because I really like the keyboard on this one, I feel that even just between the palm, where you rest your palm and where your hands kind of fall on the keyboard,
it's
a very good placement. The problem that I have on this Mac, and I didn't have this on the older ones, you know, previous to the Touch Bar ones, I feel like I'm off about just like a couple, like a centimeter, I'm off. And all my, I keep hitting I for you now on this keyboard. And the other issue that I have is that my pinky will constantly hit the escape button on the touch bar. So when I'm typing, my finger kind of rubs up
swipes
on the
or whatever,
swipes the touch bar, and it actually goes back. So it's just placement of this keyboard is terrible on this one. But with this one, I just feel like the throw is good. It doesn't feel flat. It's a very good feel for the keyboard. Something that you really don't have with a lot of these, you know, smaller Ultrabook-style laptops.
I'm curious if you'll like this one. The issue with the Spectre 13, which was true of the previous version as well, is that the wrist rest area is small.
It's one
because it's a smaller device.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, I have big hands. I mean, I could see that being a little bit of an issue. I need to test it more before I say.
But you don't like the 13-inch form factor of these, of any laptop.
Yeah,
right?
I prefer bigger devices for sure. The thing that's interesting about a lot of these devices, like the Spectre 13, is that it's a 13.3-inch screen, but it's in a 12-inch body. And so for a lot of people, that's fantastic. It's small, it's light, it's thin, it's easy to carry around, it's really portable. For me, it's like a little more room, just to rest my hands, you know, that kind of thing. But that said, the feel of the keys is unbelievable. And I think part of it has to do with they got all the basics right, which, we know that HP does a great job on the keyboards. But the material itself, because it's coated in this kind of ceramic-like coating.
It feels great.
Has a neat kind of hard quality to it that I think is actually really great for typing. So I'm curious. I need to spend more time with it. Like I said, there's also a new generation, third generation Spectre X360 13-inch.
Are you getting that one also?
I believe so. I don't have it yet, but that's one of my favorite laptops of all time. But again, you get into that for someone like me who prefers kind of a bigger device.
Yeah.
You get into that issue where they're making them smaller and smaller. They keep the keyboard, you know, full size. They keep the screen big, you know, for the size of the body. But they get rid of the bezels. They get, like this one, the keyboard is right up against the edges of the screen. If you go back and look at that X360 you've got, you'll see there's about an inch of space on either side of the keyboard, right?
Yeah.
On the Spectre 13, there's maybe a quarter of an inch or something, or less than half an inch, but there's not that much space at all. It pretty much goes up to the edges.
Yeah.
So the device is smaller. But man, it's gorgeous. It's really nice.
Yeah, I'm, you know, when I saw Mike Nash at the event, that HP event, I, you know, we were talking about computers and he asked me he's like, why do you use a Mac?
Yeah. What is wrong?
Essentially, what is wrong with it? And I explained to him, I'm like, listen, the consistency from PC to PC every 3 years, you know, once you get used to something, you kind of, number one, it's, this is what I've been using for a decade. And that's what you continue using. It's the change that, you know, it was a hard thing for me to start using, by the way, to go to a Mac. I was not a fan and I kind of fell into and I have things that I like and it just serves a certain need with certain things that I do. But I've over the last, I guess, 12 months, I've kind of changed my tune about this and the build quality is not what it was. The overall operating system is not what it was. You know, all these great things that Apple prided themselves on is kind of slowly going out the window. And if you have been a long-term Mac user, you start noticing this. This isn't something that you would notice if this is your first laptop or your second Mac. But if you've been using it for a significant amount of time, and Paul, you've had a ton of Macs over the last decade.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the last decade. And when
I still don't have one of the new ones, right? So if the modern MacBook and now these last two generation MacBook Pros.
Yeah, this touch bar thing, I don't know. There are benefits to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the cons,
like what, Andrew?
Like if I need a proper like, emoji, like if I need I to send you. Like a,
provide your answer without using the word emoji.
Let's see. Other than emoji,
spend $3,000 on this computer?
No, nothing. There's absolutely, you know, there are some shortcuts that actually work well in certain apps.
Yeah. No, of course.
But other than that, it's not a necessary thing. The trackpad is way too big. Hello, Paul. I've lost you. Uh-oh. Paul's disappearing again. Let's see if we can bring him back. Paul, can you hear me? Let's bring Paul back, everybody. Let's think positive thoughts and bring Paul back. Can we bring him back? Let's see. So I like to use these devices for the long term, so I could give you a fair and honest reaction rather than it being just as quick, you know, oh, this is a great review. Like you go to one of these tech websites and they have a MacBook or they have an iPhone or they have an Android phone for a week and they tell you if it's great or not. That's not enough time to get a real world experience. And unfortunately, in the sensational headline era that we live in with all this clickbaity stuff and you're competing with every blog, you really just want to get it out there as fast as possible. The goal isn't to provide you with the most accurate information; it's to provide you with the quickest information. So, when I like to get these devices, I actually like to use them for the long term and give you an honest reaction. With this Spectre, it was my first HP laptop, and I can't even tell you how long, you know, I'm so glad I decided to review this thing because it really opened me up to what the PC market has turned into, and it's something great. It's extremely competitive. I honestly would tell you that unless you're in the Mac ecosystem and you know, like me, I use iMessage. I have a lot of apps in the Mac store. I have a lot of iOS apps. I FaceTime a lot now. So unless you're in that ecosystem and it's important to you, I don't know why I would recommend a Mac to anybody. Before, my recommendation was, listen, it's consistently decent build quality. Yeah, you're paying a little bit more, but I prefer it. I prefer the operating system. While I get Paul back here for the next couple minutes. There's Paul.
Hey.
And you have a couple minutes left, right?
Yep.
Okay. So what I was saying is, you know, when I do these reviews, and much like you, you do your first impression and then you do your long-term study. And mm-hmm. I actually learned from you to do this because I feel like that is the most honest way to determine if a product is good in this era where everything is clickbaity and everything is – it's not about giving the most accurate information. It's about giving the quickest information.
Exactly.
You know, you have all these reviews. Like I have to tell you, that Pixel device, I read about – you know, like what is the organization that rates the cameras? On these devices.
DX, yeah. OMark, or whatever.
Yeah. So I started doing some research about them, and it is actually not the most accurate way to determine what the camera on this phone is.
Okay.
It's not, because first of all, it's not out of 100 either. That's the other thing that people don't realize. Right. So that's one thing. The other thing is, certain organizations have, this is, again, I'm not saying this is accurate, okay? I'm mm-hmm. saying this is from my understanding. Sometimes get a curve with their devices because of the relationship that they have with this company.
Well, hold on a second. So that's a charge, but I'm not sure.
From what I understood, it also a lot of times when they review it, like they're putting together the way that they combine your score isn't the overall best picture quality. It's multiple factors that go into it compared to other devices on the market. Like, I'll give you an example. The LG phone that everybody keeps praising for their camera. So I started researching this camera, and the camera is unbelievable if you fiddle with the manual settings. As taking the camera and just taking a picture, it is not as good as the iPhone.
Okay.
And I know people are going to get mad at me. I was playing around with a Pixel. I had there was an iPhone 8 and there was a Pixel XL, and I was playing around with it. I have to tell you, okay, the Pixel is very good when you spend time and you use, much like every other Android phone, very good when you spend time and you play around with it and you play with the settings. But as far as taking the phone and clicking a photo, iOS still wins. This is my personal experience. Nope. The iPhone still okay wins.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the previous generation Pixel, I would tell you that my experience is exactly the opposite of that.
You know what, Paul? You're wrong. but you know, it also is the environment. It's all these things. Yeah. So my point is, I think people need to use the devices and determine it for themselves, because depending on the environment, depending on how you take photos, depending on what it is, there's 10 different types of devices out there for you. There's no...
I can tell you, if you didn't care about smartphone quality at all, camera quality at all, you could save yourself a lot of pain, heartache, and money.
Oh, God.
You know, your options would be exponentially bigger.
You know what your options are?
My problem
are,
is I really do care about that, so...
Yeah, me too. So what my point was before I got derailed.
What is your
off
point,
this phone,
Andrew?
Next week, I want to spend some time and I want to talk to you about my discovery with how these overall rankings work for these camera phones.
Okay.
There was a great video that I saw that explained everything, and they actually were a fan of the Pixel XL, and they are like still, and they say it is probably one of the best. But you can't just go based on numbers when you're looking at if this is the best camera phone.
Okay.
I want to talk about that next week. Also, I'm hoping that I get this HP device. So you got, overall, you like it, but it's a little bit too small for you.
No, I'm not even saying that. I am not sure yet. I just got it, right? So it's beautiful. It's really well made. The ceramic coating is amazing. It's the keyboard quality is amazing. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Look at that. That's stunning.
Yeah, you know, they did the kind of...
It's like a brushed...
A pale gold on the bottom instead of the bright, you know, fingerprinty, shiny.
I actually complained about it. I said I would suffer with the fingerprints. I actually preferred it, not the sandblasted one, the shiny one.
Okay, well, they still sell that other kind, too. It's not quite as fingerprinty as
they
before.
Asked me why, and I said, because I feel rich.
Like a Saudi prince.
I feel like a... I feel like a Saudi prince with this device.
Everything I have has to have gold accents on it.
Just gold plated everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to tell you, my uncle is one of those guys.
Yeah.
You walk into his house, it's like the freaking Parthenon.
Sure.
Roman columns and, you know, the peeing boy into the fountain.
It's a classic style that never goes out.
Yeah. It's playing opera music when you walk in, and there's gold plated everything. It's a very nice device. I'm just hoping to get my hands on it. I'm going to get that. I'm getting the Elite Book, the upgraded Elite Book, and I believe they're going to send me that Omen X.
Yeah.
That I'm very interested, because I've never had any kind of experience with these, a positive experience with these gaming machines, laptops. It's always been too bulky and too hot.
The HP ones are really nice.
And these HP ones are very nice. Very nice.
They really are.
By the way, I don't get a dime from HP. I just want to let everyone know. I don't get money. I don't get kickbacks. I just want to let people know this. What happened? Something bad, Paul?
That's okay. I gotta.
You gotta go.
An email that made me nervous, but it's okay.
Okay. So my point is, I give a fair assessment of these devices, and I've been very impressed with what HP's doing, and I'm also impressed with Lenovo. I'm a big fan of Lenovo also, but my favorite at the moment is HP, and Apple's out. In my opinion, I hate them.
Wow.
I've broken up with them. I've seen the light. So it's a whole new world I'm living in. And 2018 is going to be a new me.
Jeez. All right.
All right, guys. All right, Paul. You go. You go do your thing. Guys, thank you for tuning in. If you're sticking around, I'm going to hang out for a couple more minutes. And I'll do a little post show. And I'll actually go into more detail about this camera thing a little bit on the post show. Paul, we should talk, because I'm really hoping that we can move the show up a half hour.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, because the problem is I'm not always around then.
I know. I wish we could go back to Tuesdays. That would be the solution here. God, if I could figure something out to do that. Or maybe do Fridays work for you? Or no?
No.
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 Okay. We'll figure something out. I'm hopeful. I think we will figure something out in the new year. Paul, where can people find you? At The Rot, right?
Yes.
At The Rot on Twitter. TheRot.com for all things Paul. And you and Brad do an unbelievable job over there. And the premium, you can sign up for a premium membership on TheRot.com. You get access to all these great premium articles. And you get access to First Ring Daily, which John produces. Our very own Suncast here produces that show. You guys do a great job. All right, guys. We'll see you all next time. Take care.